termites, those little bugs will literally eat you out of house and home. Now in the U.S., these bugs consume somewhere between $1.5 and $20 billion in property every year. But what you may not know is how integral termites are to the global ecosystem. Now, if termites were wiped off the face of the earth, the world's most important rivers would clog up. The oceans would become toxic. Now, scientists say you can learn a lot from these bugs, and they're now studying termite biological and ecological systems. Termites have very distinct gut and gene structures, which help them to transform grass and wood into biofuel. Well, scientists want to be able to do just that to reduce our dependence on oil. Now, in her new book, Underbug, An Obsessive Tale of Termite and Technology, author and journalist Lisa Morganelli does a deep dive on termites. She says these bugs could be the key to solving some of the planet's biggest environmental problems. Her book is published by Scientific American, Farrar and Strauss Giroux. Thank you so much, Lisa.
Thank you.
So you wrote, I had been writing about the problems of petroleum for 7 years, and I was at the end of my rope, both as an oil-consuming citizen and as a human being. And then termites come to play. Where do these termites come into all this?
I had been doing an article about termites and biofuels because, as you mentioned, the termite gut microbes are sort of a guideline for how to break down wood and grass. And so geneticists were sort of pawing through these guts of the termites and the microbes genetically looking for enzymes that might work to break down grass that we could use to make biofuels, which we might call grasoline. And
grasoline.
Yeah. So I had done the story, and it was the summer of 2008, and the price of gasoline was like $4.25 a gallon, the highest it had ever been. Everything was kind of out of control. You know, we were going into a recession. We had the election coming up. And I got this email from one of the researchers, a geneticist, saying, do you want to come out with our team to go on a termite safari? And I was like, termite safari? Yeah.
A termite safari. Okay, so what is a termite safari? What are you doing?
Okay, well, we needed to gather as many different kinds of termites as we could. And so we were going to the desert in Arizona, and we're going to look for termites. We need about 8,000 or 10,000 termites to bring back to their gene sequencers.
Different types or the same? Are they all the same species or they're different?
No, they're different species. So we needed different species, but in terms of numbers of actual termites, we needed like 8,000 to 10,000, which is a significant amount. The other thing is, like, you drive through the desert, you don't see much. You see a little mesquite, you see kind of an eaten up cactus, you see like a lot of flatness, you know, sort of ground, you see some stuff, maybe you see a dried cow patty. You don't see anything. The reason you're not seeing anything is because the termites have been there eating it away.
Wait a minute. Everything?
All the stuff that's woody.
We often think about termites in houses, but in nature, they're eating trees and...
They're eating all kinds of dead stuff. They remove it. They break it apart. They have this sort of molecular wrecking yard in their guts. They break it apart, and then they use it to fertilize the ground, or they use it to feed each other, for one thing. Termites kind of eat from each other's butts. That's one thing you need to know. Sorry. I think I need to do like a termites and toddlers thing. But anyway, so termites are, they make bioavailable nitrogen. They synthesize all kinds of stuff in their guts, and they like return it to the earth. And that's what makes fertility in these really dry ecosystems.
So in the deserts and things like that, what about in lush, in rainforests, same thing?
Same thing. The termites nest in the trees.
I hear these strange stories about termites eating everything. They like paper. Have they eaten money? I know they cost money, but...
Yeah, no, they've eaten a significant... One lady in Guangdong put something like $60,000 wrapped in a newspaper or something in a back drawer to keep it, and she went back to it and it had been eaten. I've heard that the U.S. Mint actually has a whole section that collects money that's been eaten by termites, but I wasn't actually able to get any assurance of that.
She lost $60,000 to termites?
Yeah. Yeah, they crawled into a bank in India and ate something like, I don't know, a lot of money. Yeah, they eat money all the time. They also, there's another kind of termite that's like a super primitive termite in Australia that can apparently eat truck tires. They can eat through... They can eat through the wrappers on electrical cables, so sometimes the power goes out because the termites have eaten through it. But generally, there are 3,000 species of known termites on Earth. Only 27 or so of them are invasive and will eat your house. The rest of them are out there just doing their thing underneath our feet without us having any idea.
So what happened on the safari when you were looking for these termites?
Well, I went out, and at first I couldn't find any termites, of course, because you really have to sort of know what you're looking for. And I'd like get down on the ground and flip over anything, a piece of wood, a rock, whatever, see if somebody was scampering away. And I finally found some. And if you're with entomologists and you're gathering termites, the way you do it is you use what they sometimes call a pooter or an aspirator. It's like a test tube with a tube on it and a little tiny auto air filter so that you can suck up the termites into the test tube without getting them in your mouth. which turns out to be a big deal. And so then I had like a little clump of them. And the weird thing is, like, they're so tiny and they're insignificant. They're like a little tiny kid's fingernail clipping, each one of them. They're totally insignificant. They're sort of see-through. They don't have eyes because they're social insects, and the workers and the soldiers don't have eyes. They don't have wings. They don't have a heavy exoskeleton. And they were just clinging to each other because they are social.
I'm Duarte Geraldino, and I'm speaking with Lisa Marganelli, author of the new book, Underbug, An Obsessive Tale of Termites and Technology. This is Midday on WNYC. Up next, we're going to learn about the hierarchies of termites and their relationship to roaches. I'm Duarte Geraldino, and we're here with Lisa Marganelli. She wrote a book about termites, and there's so many fascinating things about these little bugs. So the book is called Underbug, An Obsessive Tale of Termite and Technology. What's the link between termites and cockroaches? Which one is more sophisticated?
Well, I guess you could say that a termite is a very sophisticated, highly evolved cockroach. But you also have to understand that another sophisticated, highly evolved cockroach is the praying mantis. Mm-hmm. But anyway, back to the termites. Once a long time ago, 150 million or more years ago, cockroaches just sort of had solitary eggs, and they lived on fruit and wandered around the forest, and they had their big black exoskeletons and were shiny. Not black, but dark brown exoskeletons, kind of shiny, kind of boss. And what happened was gradually, evolutionarily, they picked up some microbes and were able to eat wood and digest wood. And it's very, very hard to digest wood. It's the cellulose is kind of locked in cages molecularly, and you need special enzymes that only microbes can provide. So they picked up some of these microbes that allowed them to eat wood.
So just to clarify, the microbe. What exactly is a microbe?
It's like a bacteria, or it could be a protist, but they're like little tiny single-celled creatures, although the protists have more than one cell.
So they're other little independent living beings inside of a tiny
guts.
Termite gut.
Yes. Now, the thing was, the termites picked these up, and that made them able to eat some wood, but termites molt their intestines all the time, so they would lose all their microbes. So they started...
When you say molt their intestines, you mean they just... What?
They just shed them like a snake, but from the inside out.
Okay. Wow.
All right. So they they became, one way or another, they became social, which meant that they were sharing those little dollops of trophallactic fluid, they call it, wood shake from each other's butts. And they were kept the microbes traveling within their colony. So everybody was sort of a microbe bank and switching them around. And that led to them becoming social somehow. We don't know the cause and the effect, but they became social, and they sort of started to pool all their resources. So the queen did all the reproduction, and the workers would go out and gather the food and bring it back to the queen and feed her. And the queen has pheromones that suppress the workers from maturing.
So they're all adolescents in these colonies.
Yes, it's a neoteny. It's always 4 o'clock at the mall. If they go to the mall anymore. And then they also develop soldiers, and the soldiers sort of develop from workers, and some of them have big heads that they use to block passages. Some of them have mandibles that they snap or slash, and some of them have nozzles on their head, and they squirt like a little bit of a turpentine-like substance to repel invaders.
Wow. So you write workers and soldiers are usually eyeless and wingless, mm-hmm. whereas the kings and queens have eyes and wings. Is it, Is this position based on a physical hierarchy or physical ability, this wingless queen? I mean,
well, some, so within the mound, the queen has, the sexual reproductives will have, they will mature outside the realm of the pheromones that suppress the rest of the mounds.
And she keeps them out there, or they just happen to be out there?
No, who knows? This is the thing I spent 10 years diving into, is like, what are the termites doing, and do they know what they're doing? Of course they don't know what they're doing, but they, you know, they are doing stuff that's very sophisticated. So yes, there are babies that develop that don't get the pheromone that would keep them from maturing into queens. And so they develop wings, and the kings and the queens burst out of the mound or burst out of wherever.
The future kings and queens.
Yeah, they burst out of wherever they are, like the side of your house, with wings. And they fly sometimes just 3 feet or sometimes 30 feet. And then they try to start a new colony there. And they will, when they land, they break their little wings off. They like do a little kind of dance. They break those wings off.
Wow. So they're there for the long game. They're there. Connect the dots between, you know, these termite colonies and the power of the termite and waterways. Why would rivers clog up? Why would the oceans get toxic?
Oh, well, because termites are removing so much woody, grassy material that we never even have to account for. They're like the vacuum cleaners of the world. And they remove that stuff, they eat it up, and they turn it back into basically fertilizer to grow more plants. So when things die, they don't end up in the river. Just some of them end up in the river. You don't have the whole system silting up. And that's if the rivers were to silt up, you would start to get big changes in the chemistry of the ocean.
So just to clarify, how much can one termite eat in terms of its body mass or whatever?
Oh, a lot. I mean, kilograms and kilograms. They carry a tremendous amount. I don't know the exact number, but you know, termites as individuals will carry huge amounts of water and dirt. They'll carry, you know, a kilogram of termites, I think, carries something like 300 kilograms of dirt, but they also might carry like five or more times that amount in water.
Wow.
To build a mound. So they're constantly moving stuff. I mean, it's kind of like we think we're just standing on the ground, but there's like a moving carpet underneath us of insects involving termites and also earthworms and others that are constantly shifting that dirt around underneath us, and we don't realize it.
Is that how they build these mounds?
Yeah, they're constantly moving the dirt up into the mounds. The mounds can be as high as, you know, 17 feet high in Namibia, which is one of the places that I went to, and they're also higher than that in other places. But a 17-foot mound built by half-inch insects is basically the Burj Khalifa. I mean, it's the tallest, it's an incredibly tall human building.
So how many stories would it be for a human building? What are we talking about? It would be...
What is that, like 172 or something? I'm not sure.
I mean, it's extraordinary. These are termite skyscrapers, essentially. And you say that the termites are essentially like, you know, they break down all this wood that would essentially clog our waterways and lead to more toxins in the oceans. So if they are so critically important, why is there so much research out there to essentially destroy these bugs, to eliminate them?
Well, they're always eating our houses because wood makes such a great way to build a house, you know. So the termites eat the houses. And so actually, yeah, a little bit more than half, about 49% of the research that was done on termites in the last two decades was actually done on how to kill them. So that's one of the reasons you don't know more nice things about termites, is because everyone wants to kill them.
You speak about some researchers who say that these mounds have a soul.
Yeah, I'm not totally sure what a soul is. You know, a soul in terms of termites. But the thing is that the termite mound functions in a very peculiar body-like way. So underneath a mound in Namibia, the Macrotermes mound, you'll have a big fungus. And the fungus is about nine times the size of the termites. And the termites gather grass to make the fungus, to feed the fungus, and then they inoculate each little ball of grass with fungus, and they arrange them in this weird, like, graham cracker crust kind of pattern. And then they go and they slurp the sugars off that, and they run around and feed themselves each other sugars because the fungus can digest the grass. So that's like a stomach, right? And then the mound itself actually functions kind of like a lung. Like it does, it catches passing breezes, kind of filters them in and sort of moves air through. But then also at certain points, it almost pumps or wafts the air out in a more sort of aggressive kind of way, so that the heat that's built up in the bottom near the fungus gets dissipated and the gases get dissipated upwards. So there's a lot going on. And then the queen herself is sort of like the ovaries and the whole reproduction center for the mound. And you could think of the worker termites as a, you know, as legs or traveling mouths, anything you want. You can just pick your own metaphor. And the soldiers are kind of an immune system. So there is this weird way that the termite mound itself acts like a
living organism?
Yeah.
A single
superorganism. But then when you add the microbes, you've got a superorganism because you've got this community of termites and then you've got this community of microbes inside the termites. And that's really kind of mind-blowing.
Your work is really extraordinary because you have me all wrapped up in this notion of what a termite gut might look like. I understand that 90% of a termite's guts are not found anyplace else on Earth.
The microbes, yeah.
Those microbes, they're only in that gut.
Mm-hmm.
How'd that happen?
Well, they met 150 million years ago. The microbe met the termite, and then they got into that gut, and the world in that gut was very, very comfortable. And they really took symbiosis to another level. So the microbes in that gut, some of them, you know, might have descended from something old that we haven't seen for a while, but others of them really changed in dramatic and weird ways. One of the things that there is there are these protists in there. And protists are big, and they're like 100 times the size of a bacteria. They're big, they've got swirling hairs on them. They're just incredible. There's one that's called Myxotrixa paradoxa, which means the paradoxical creature with the mixed up hairs. I mean, like they just dazzled researchers when they first saw them under a microscope. Well, it turns out that is five separate creatures collaborating as one. The things that look like hair swirling around it are actually separate spirochetes that have sort of given up their individuality to hook on to the outside of this sort of pear-shaped thing.
Thank you so much. And scientists want to know how they turn that grass and wood into fuel so that we can replicate that for the oil industry. Thank you so much for your research. Really fascinating.
Thank you.
Now, I'm Duarte Geraldino, and I've been speaking with Lisa Margonelli about her new book, Underbug, an obsessive tale of termites and technology. On tomorrow's show, hear former New Yorker staff writer Jeffrey Toobin talk about the political evolution of Rudy Giuliani and his role in President Trump's White House. Then, cartoonist Liana Fink talks about her new graphic memoir, Passing for Human. Plus, author Joan Morgan reflects on the 20th anniversary of Lauryn Hill's iconic album, The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill. And the new investigation looks at why, in the Me Too era, many women still can't report sexual abuse and harassment in many industries. Our show is produced by Catherine Millsop, Ursula Summer, Jules Dodson, and Sam Anderson. Melissa Egan is the executive producer. Matt Miranda was at the audio controls, and we had help today from contributing producers Fran Jacobs and Hugh Sampson. Thanks for listening, and join us again tomorrow.